How you guys doing? Hey, man, what the energy. That's awesome. Everybody's had their caffeine, I can see. Can you believe that it's already the second weekend of 2011? The second weekend of 2011. That blows my mind. That means there's only 50 weekends left this year. So this is the time of year where everybody's looking ahead and going, oh, this is the year I'm going to do this, and this is the year that I'm going to do that, and I'm going to change the world, and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff that we say. I mean, don't we? We say these things. I remember the last couple services, I said, how many of you guys are still keeping to your resolution? And there were like two people, you know, that had done it. So we're far enough into the year for you to go, it's uncomfortable to get up and go to the gym. I'm going to use that time for sleep. So I kind of thought through my year, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I don't want to just have this sort of ambiguous, like, my goal for this year is to change the world. Well, if that's your goal, you know, how do you measure that? How do you measure that at the end of the year? And so I started looking at what I wanted to do, and I decided I'm going to have some really concrete things that I want to accomplish this year. Not something too broad, like I want to lose weight. Have you ever had a resolution you want to lose weight? Anybody in this room ever decided you want to lose weight? If all your goal is to lose weight, don't eat for a day. Look at the scale. You've accomplished your goal. It's a gift. Yes, that's free. That's free right there. But if you want sustainable change, if you want to get somewhere, like for me, I don't want to just lose some weight. I want to lose 50 pounds this year. That's quite a bit of weight, but I believe I can do it. And so I sit down and I looked at these things. Here are the things that I want to do. And I gave very specific things that look like lose 50 pounds. One of my goals, I have a hobby I've been kind of doing on the side of writing. And one of my goals is I would like to write a screenplay this year. Whatever your idea for this year that you want to do, the truth is if you don't back up and go, okay, it's going to take these 7 steps to get there, you're never going to accomplish it, right? And everything that we choose to do throughout this year, if you're the type of person that has spent some time reflecting over the last year and you're looking at this year, it all comes down to how we spend our time, doesn't it? To lose weight, I have to make a decision about how I'm going to spend my time. And so for me, I'm making the decision to get up at 4:30 and go to the gym at 5. What else could I be doing in that period of time? Sleeping, yeah, of course. I mean, that's a great thing. So as we start looking at all the little things that we do and we want to do this year, it all comes down to how we spend our time. And so I spent some time reflecting this past week on how I spent my time last year because I wanted to make wise decisions about how I spend my time this year so that I can look back at the end of this year and say, I did these concrete, measurable things. And when I look back, I see that these little pockets of time that I spent on certain things over the last year, when you kind of start putting them all together, they equal quite a bit of time, don't they? Right? If you ever think about the average person spends X amount of hours per week on Facebook or whatever, well, when you extrapolate that over a 12-month period, you're an addict. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're journaling, you're like, oh, I have a problem. Oops, you know? And that's kind of where you find yourself. Well, think about all those little things we do, those little nuggets throughout the year, and we add them up and we look over the course of our lifetime, how much time we spend doing those things. And so I did a little research to find out how much time over the course of our lifetime do those little moments add up to? And I thought we could take a look at a couple of those today. So just throw this out. Let's look at sleep. How much time do you think people spend sleeping over the course of their lifetime? Stack it all together, back to back. How much time? 30 years? Great guess. Anyone else? What? 29? 4 years? We spend, as human beings, an average of 22 years of our life sleeping. So the average lifespan of an American today is 78.4 and some change years. 22 years of that are spent sleeping. Now, if your neighbor right next to you is adding to that 22 years, right now, give him a sharp elbow to the ribs and wake him up. This is important stuff. One thing that we love to do, one reason why I'm trying to lose 50 pounds, is because as humans, we spend 7 years of our life eating. And some of us spend more than that, some of us less, but we love to eat. Eating is one of those things. It is great because it tastes good, but you're also having great fellowship, you know, relationship with people. So over our lifetime, 7 years back to back spent eating. I love this next one. It's really interesting. We spend a year of our life, one whole year, searching for things that we lost. That's just dumb. I mean, come on. That's just crazy. And, you know, what's the one thing in the morning that we always never can seem to find? Our keys. Have you ever been late to work because you could not find your keys? Anyone? Anyone? Everyone in here, come on. Are you serious? You were just too sleepy when you were driving to remember that you couldn't find your keys for 30 minutes. I mean, how frustrating is that? The average person spends 1 year. I think that's for women. I think men spend a lot more than 1 year because they're trying to find the remote. Where is the remote? Who took the remote? It takes us a lot longer. This next one is really interesting. This is a really powerful statistic. The average human being spends about 1 year on the toilet. Some of us more than others. Oh, gosh. Well, and then another thing people like to do, kissing. Kissing, we spend in our lifetime, cumulative average, 2 whole weeks of our lifetime with our lips locked with someone else. 2 weeks. Now, if you look at that, 22 years sleeping, 7 years eating, a year searching for the remote or the car keys or whatever it might be, or kissing, that's a lot of our time. But those big numbers come down to the minutes and the way that we choose to spend our minutes and our hours and our days and our weeks and our months and our years. Make sense? It all kind of goes together to create this big package. And maybe you've set a New Year's resolution based on one of those things. If you've set a resolution on kissing, that's pretty cool. I mean, I not had anybody personally tell me, you know, we want to kiss X amount of minutes this year, but what a goal, I guess. I doubt anybody has a resolution about how much time they spend on the toilet. Unless you're a stay-at-home mom, God bless you, that's the only place you can go to get away from your kids. And so your resolution might be that you're going to spend a lot more time in the bathroom this year. I remember when people say, I can't even have a private moment in the bathroom. My kids come in there and they bother me. And I'm like, there is a time-tested solution. Lock the door, right? But I want to talk today, and I really want to dive into something that I think is really, really important. It's the second most time-consuming thing that we do in all of our lives. And that is this thing that we call work. And you might be thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, it's Sunday, it's my weekend, the last thing I want to talk about is work. But it really is one of the most important things that we do with our life. It's something that we spend tons of time. We spend all these minutes and hours and weeks and months doing. And over the course of a lifetime, how long do you think the average human spends working? Cumulative. 5 years, 6 years, 100 years, 10 years. And that might not sound like a lot considering how much we sleep, but I'm going to break it down like this. That's 92,160 hours at work. So if you think your work week is long, you know, compared against that, not really that much. This is really good news for those of you who are older and you're maybe getting close to that 92,000 limit. This really sucks if you're 19 and working at Wendy's. You've got a cumulative of 16 hours toward that 92,000 total, right? Right? 3,840 days, 128 months that we spend of our lifetime working. Yet it's one of the last things that we set serious, tangible resolutions for. So I want to look at work today through two lenses. Through the lens of two statements. And I want you to sit up and listen to this because these two statements, if you will listen to these, if you will internalize these, if you will focus on these, they will have the potential to affect every single area of your life. And I'm not just saying that for a preaching point or just to be some, you know, dramatic tension. I want you really to understand, I really believe this moves beyond the typical weekly sermon point. This is like life concepts here that will change your life if you really get this. And so if you're a note taker, today's your day. If you're not a note taker, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and pull out your service guide and something to write with. I'm going to give you just a couple of seconds to go ahead and do that, because I so believe that what I'm about to say has the potential to change your life. Not just your work, but all of your life. And here's the first statement, and this is really, really important. My job doesn't define who I am. Who does? God does. Would you say that with me? My job doesn't define who I am. God does. And I think that's one of the most important statements for all of lifetime, because there are a lot of people that spend their life chasing everything that would give them some sort of identity other than God. And I'm going to unpack that this morning and talk about the danger of that, but then I'm going to help put it all back together and figure out what are our next steps. And really, the reason we do this, we find this great value in our job, our culture sort of indoctrinates us, that's what we do. I mean, we're trained to do that since a very young age. What's the first thing that you ask someone when you first meet them? So, what do you do? Well, why do we ask that? Well, maybe it's because we're trying to find a deep human connection with them. And I do think that's a large part of it. Trying to see, can I identify with this person? Do we have something in common? Is there something about them that I can connect with? But I think another reason is to sort of figure out where they are in life and to size them up. And I think if we're really honest, most of us have sized someone up based on their response to what they do. And that's scary. And if we really believed that we're defined not by our job but by God, our response in life would probably look a little bit different. Business Weekly just reported that 84% of American workers want to leave their jobs in 2011 and try something new. That's these three sections of this room want to find something different. You guys over there, you're stable, you're okay. You guys all here, everyone unhappy, wanting to do something different. But don't you think if people really believe that their identity came from God and not from what they do, they wouldn't feel like they always had to change what they're doing? The average American worker changes jobs every 4 years. And why do they do that? I don't know. Maybe they got a better offer. But I think a lot of people have ran through life trying to find this level of significance based on what it is that they do. And they keep chasing that, and they keep hungering for that. And they can't seem to scratch that itch deep inside to feel valued and to feel a great sense of worth. And it's led us as human beings to this sort of identity crisis, where we've allowed our identity, our self-worth, to be defined by what we do. And I think we could all agree, this is probably the wrong season in history to allow our job to define who we are, right? We all know someone that's lost their job. If you know someone personally that's lost their job in the last 2 years because of the economy, raise your hand. Okay, look around the room, keep them high. Look around the room. Look at that. Nearly every person in here has had contact, or maybe you are that person who's lost your job because the economy took a turn. And the problem is, we all too often allow our work to define us. And when we put all of our eggs in the basket of our job, what's the problem is sometimes our jobs change, right? As a matter of fact, you could go back to that statement that I said, my job doesn't define who I am, God does, and replace the word job with almost anything in the world under the sun. And if you were to say to yourself, my blank defines who I am, my success, my opinion of what people think of me, or people's opinion defines who I am, the stock market defines who I am, my career, my job, or even your family, our possessions, if we were to look at those things, all of those things have the capacity to change. And what happens when they change? When they go away? We lose our identity. That's a problem. That is a very, very big problem. What do we do is we realize if we put our identity in anything else, in anything other than God himself, our stability goes away. And when we confuse what we do with who we are, it can put us on a really bad path. Think of the stay-at-home mom who's pouring herself into her children's life, and she's lost herself as a woman. and as a child of God because she's so busy working to raise the kids. Now, I'm not saying stay home. I think that's an amazing job. I think it's very, very important. But that's not the only thing that makes you who you are. Make sense? Because we've all heard of someone who they're the stay-at-home mom and they're so focused on their kids. They don't take time for themselves. It's all, they become so kid-centric in their home. And what happens when the kids go off to college? They lose their identity. Maybe you're a businessman and you've worked so hard. You've poured your entire life into getting your businesses off the ground. And if you're entrepreneurial, chances are you've probably had more than one. You've invested so much of your life into getting this thing going and the economy took a downturn and you lost it all. And you're just devastated. I think of if you're a musician and something happens to one of your arms and you can't play. If you're a doctor, you're a surgeon, and something happens to your hands and you can't operate anymore. And so we see people all throughout creation who have identified so much themselves with their job that when it goes away, they're lost. But I don't think that work really is the problem, because I think it's important to realize that work is a part of God's plan. Work is a part of God's plan from the beginning. If we go back to the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, it says, God created. Didn't it say that? God created. He shaped. He worked. He did all of these things. That was, God is a worker. So it's not that work in and of itself is not what God wants, because it is. God took Adam and he put him in the garden. Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to what? To work it and keep it. It was a part of God's plan since the very beginning of time for you and I to work, whatever that might look like. It's not like that the utopian society would be that we all sit around and, you know, eat Doritos and watch SportsCenter and don't work. I mean, you know, for some of us that might really appeal. But that's not what God intended. He planned for us to work. What happened when Adam and Eve ate the apple? Their work, the ground was cursed. It made their work harder, but God never said, well, if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't have had to work. God intends for us to work. And we work because it's important. It pays our bills and it puts food on the table and it gives us a sense of accomplishment and we've done something. Even the scripture says we should work. Proverbs says, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits will have plenty of what? Poverty. See, I'm a dreamer. I come from a family of dreamers, people that believe there's something so much bigger than we could ever even imagine and just going to chase it until we die. But the problem with that is if we don't learn to harness that sort of creative attention and channel it into doing something productive, we can always be saying, I'm going to do this, but we're not actually getting something done. So that verse for me is very convicting. I have to think about that and go, I've got to focus on what it is that I'm doing and get stuff done. It doesn't mean that I shouldn't have dreams deep in my heart, but I need to be taking steps forward towards something. The scripture commands it, and I need to take care of my family. And the truth is, our work finds its meaning in who we are. And that's why this is so important. We don't find our meaning in who our work is. Our work finds its meaning in who we are. And here's the sole thing. I'm going to give you the one big thing that defines who you are. And it's this beautiful verse. And I encourage you to write this verse down. If you need to print this out and stick it in your cubicle or put it in your car or keep it in your pocket and pull it out, wherever you are and focus on this, this verse tells you and me who we really are and what our identity really is. It's Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. Would you read this with me? For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand, that we should walk in them. That's right. You and I, we're a product of God's work. When you bought your kids any kind of gift this year, you bought them a Wii or whatever, it's got this stamp on it that says it was made by this manufacturer, right? Our cars, they have these emblems on there because they're proud of who it is that made that. Ford made your car, or Nissan, or whoever it is that your car manufacturer is. They put it on there. And manufacturers create something, they put their stamp on it, and they have a purpose for that thing. Designers have a purpose. They don't just go, we're going to build this box and sell it to the public. Well, the public would say, well, what do you want me to do with the box? Right? They don't just have this thing with no purpose. What if marketing didn't clearly spell out what this thing is for? No one would ever buy it. You wouldn't know what it's for. In the same way, God created you and me. We are a byproduct of God's hands shaping us with the purpose. His workmanship, he spelled out good things for you and me, things for us to do. That is our identity, not our job. Now, you might be sitting there right now and you're going through a hard time, or maybe your job just stinks. It's a job that you hate and you wish you could find something different. Or maybe you're sitting here or you're listening to the podcast and you're thinking, I'm unemployed. I've been laid off from my job and it's just been miserable. That doesn't change your status before God. God has not left you. He has not forsaken you. You still have that stamp. And if we could look deep in the recesses of your heart, we would see that you're stamped as a child of the chosen one. And although your posture and your position before men might be low, or you might feel that I don't have anything to offer right now, I'm in waiting or whatever it is, you're still a product of God's workmanship. He still has a plan for you. He still wants to do exceedingly good things through your life. And if we could just get this idea that we're not defined by our jobs, and if we could take that concept that we're defined by God, it literally, truly would affect how we see everything. Our work would start to look a lot different. I want you to say this with me again. My job doesn't define who I am. God does. And say this with conviction. My job doesn't define who I am. God does. I hope you believe that. And think about that. If our identity is in Jesus, and Jesus is involved throughout the earth, and God is involved, what if our work was a part of joining him in his work? Can you imagine that? What if we started seeing our job as more than that thing that helps us to pay the bills, or the place that we go and do our skill, or whatever it might be? What if God has us at our job for a reason? And I'm speaking directly to the people who hate their job. What if God has you there in this season for a reason? What if all of us and our job were intended to be a part of God's redemptive work throughout all of humanity? It would make sense that that's true, because God's been working in us, and God's still at work throughout the whole history of time, and that his people, they live in their existence, works and joins him in all of his creation. And I know that could be kind of intimidating to go, okay, you mean to tell me that my job at Wendy's is joining God in a part of his creation? I don't know why I keep saying Wendy's. I'm really hungry right now, but we just take a moment and reflect on that. Their new fries are good, by the way, if you guys can't have them right now, because that doesn't help me accomplish my goal. But anyway, even my job at Wendy's has significance because God could use me. And so what if we sort of brought it down to the day? Tomorrow morning, everybody's going to get up and we're going to go back to work, or maybe you're going to go out and you're looking for your job, or whatever it might be. What if tomorrow you got up and you simply asked the question, God, what do you want me to do today? What are you doing through all humanity? How can I become a part just through today? Not the seven steps to changing the world through the power of the gospel for Jesus Christ transforming our nation, but how do I go to my job tomorrow? What do you want me to do just today? Is it my attitude? Is it a skill thing you want me to do? I'm going to help unpack some of the things that we can do in the day-to-day that can really help us influence other people. And really, at our core, our being a follower of Christ, it really means that we're a direct result of God's work. And our life should be evident by how we work and the things we do. Because if we really know God, and if you really believe this, and listen, I can't stress this enough, if you really understand that who you are is defined by God and nothing else, then everything you do becomes an overflow of God's work in you, including your job and the way that you talk to your family. My job doesn't define who I am. God does. That's the first thing. So our natural next step, what do we do with that? well, how do I approach my job if I now don't see it as the end all or the thing that defines me? It's just that thing that I do, and it's a part of how I partner with God. Leads me to this very big second statement, and I want to say it, and then I'm going to ask you to read it with me, because I so believe that if you get this, your employer at the end of this year is going to be blown away with how you've worked this year. And here's the phrase: how I work reflects God's work in me. Say that with me. How I work reflects God's work in me. Ask yourself this question. Does how I work truly reflect God's work in me? That's a hard question, isn't it? If we were to survey your coworkers about your work ethic and how you treat your job, and then we happen to mention that, hey, they're a follower of Christ, would there be kind of a weird look on their face as they struggled to connect the dots there? Would they be like saying things that reflects that God's done something very significant in you? I think we're all at places, I mean, with a crowd this size, there are people at all different stages in their journey where your answer might be no. Your answer might be sometimes. Your answer might be, well, sure. And the goal is not to walk out of here and tomorrow become the perfect employee and honor God perfectly in every way, because you and I are both human. If you try to do that, you will fail. That is why resolutions don't work, because people set out these massive milestones that they'll never be able to hit. Or they don't sit back and go count the cost and go, I'm going to have to change the way that I spend my time to accomplish X, Y, Z. I'm not talking about just deciding that you're going to be a world changer tomorrow. People that change the world do it one foot in front of the other, one day at a time. If you want to be a world changer, if you want to be a difference maker, if you want your employer to value you, then get up tomorrow and ask God, how do I become a part of what you're doing? And am I letting you work through me and it becoming the overflow into my work? And I can guarantee you, if you do that, your employer is going to pay very close attention. So I want to dive into some things that I think would be helpful for all of us as we look at working this year. Some of the things that we need to do with our time and our efforts. And these would be great just to write down as just little guidelines. And even in the morning, as you ask yourself, how can I be a part of what you're doing today? Here are four or five things that could really help you walk that out. The first thing is that God intends for us to work diligently. Diligent means that we're focused. It means that we're doing what we've been asked to do. We're staying with the task and we're getting it done. And I know about myself, I am a starter, a creator. I'm really committed this year to figuring out the back end of that process of becoming a finisher to the best of my ability. That's what being diligent is. You're staying with it. Your boss has given you something to do, and you're making the most of your time. And it's hard to do that if you don't remember who's your boss. Who's our boss? God. God's ultimately our boss. There's this great passage in Colossians 3. It says, "Servants, do what you're told by your earthly masters, and don't just do the minimum that will get you by. Do your best." There are a lot of people who do just the minimum to get them by because they hate their job or because they've developed lazy tendencies or whatever it might be, but that's not what God's design for us is, and that doesn't honor God. And we've all been there, haven't we? All of us have found that spot in our life where we're just trudging along, we're not really giving the very best effort. 23, work from the heart for your real master, for who? God. Confident that you'll get paid in full when you come into your inheritance. Keep in mind always that the ultimate master you're serving is Christ. And Proverbs 12 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor. That just means if you're lazy, you're not going to be promoted. If you're focused, you're going to be put up and promoted and put in front of people you might not have ever expected to be put in front of. Think of Joseph, captured as a child, sold into slavery as a child, over and over again in his life. His diligence put him in front of Pharaoh and all of these people because he stayed after it. And God doesn't want us to mess around, and most of us probably don't, but in this room there are probably some of us who are at a place where we're not being diligent in our jobs. And I want to encourage you to remember that how you work reflects God's work in you. And God is a diligent worker. He didn't give up on you and me. He didn't write us off and say, well, here's where you are and you're never going to get better and just kind of give up. No, he's always working. He's always working at us and shaping us and refining. That's why we talk so much here at the Orchard about taking steps. We're just asking you to take a step forward. Don't try to be it all tomorrow. Just take a little step forward. God's constantly doing that for you. Diligent. Focused. A couple weeks ago, I was the drive-thru of a fast food restaurant, and I rolled up to the window, and they told me, do you want to buy the new whatever it is? And I didn't even know how to pronounce it. I'm like, no, I don't want that. I'm getting a couple of chicken meals for my kids, so I get it. And I drive around the little curve, and have you ever noticed that drive-thru like speakers are either really loud or like unbelievably quiet? You're the one where like you have to like, they talk and then you roll the window down, yell what you want, you roll it up, you wait for their response, you know, whatever. It's like, is there a volume knob anywhere, please? So I walk around, I'm driving in my car. That'd have been weird if I were walking in the drive-thru. Hello, how you doing? So I come around and as I'm sitting there, I'm waiting. And so the first window is right there. And I see the kid that's sitting there to take money. And here's what he's doing. He's leaning forward, window's here, got his phone out, going to town, texting. Last night I said it was texting me, and then I was like, that's pretty weird. I'd be like, I've got your order ready. It's going to be $5.97. How'd you get my number? So he's texting away, and I remember thinking, like, I'm pretty sure that his employer is not paying him to sit there and to text, right? And to create a farm or buy a cow or whatever it is on Facebook that he's doing. I don't know, you know? And you can read the status of all 9,000 people you're following on Twitter when you get home just the same as you can sitting in the drive-thru window. But it's a matter of integrity. He was messing around. And we've all done that. And I realize, you know, 19-year-old kid. But it's really important to find your time as a gift from God and as an opportunity to honor God by working diligently. The second thing is to honor God by working skillfully. Don't you like being around people who work with skill? You ever watch a really great musician like our band? It's fun to watch them when they're playing. They're good at what they do. Maybe you had a really awesome teacher. You love going to their class because they communicated well and they shaped you and they molded you. Maybe it's someone who does construction. I love watching people build houses or build interesting things or wire things up or, you know, plumbing or whatever it is. It's awesome to watch someone who takes what they do and they do it well. Even someone at a coffee shop who's just making an awesome latte and they seem to really enjoy it and they're doing it really well. There's something in us that resonates with people who do things with skill. And when you do things with skill, God uses that and it can promote you and promote you. Remember little David, the shepherd boy David? I want to look at this verse. It's Psalm 78. This is a great verse to remind us of how we should work. And David shepherded them with integrity of heart. With skillful hands, he led them. Well, what ended up happening with David? He did well. He ended up going out and killing this big, tall dude named Goliath. And he was a worker, and he was focused, and he was skilled, and he ended up becoming the king over all of Israel. We know him as King David. Skill's important. Maybe there are some of us in this room that we've forgotten that. There's a reason why doctors and social workers and teachers and other people, they have to take continuing education to keep their license so that they're sharp and so that they're doing well. Because you don't stop learning the moment you graduate and go get a job. If you do, that's really sad. Go take a class or watch some tutorials online or read about the thing it is you do. And if you don't have a job right now, this is the perfect opportunity for you while you're waiting for that right job to open up to either go to school or to take a class or do things that are going to beef up your resume and make you more appealing to someone who might want to hire you. You don't have to just sit and wait. You can grow, and that's for all of us. And that's why we sometimes go to conferences or workshops, and we read books like crazy, and we have conversations about them, because we want to get better at what we do. Third, God intends for us to work joyfully. Everybody in this room has worked with Debbie Downer. The wah, wah person, right? You walk in, you're like, oh, God, why didn't they take a sick day today? They have like a black cloud that surrounds them where they walk everywhere. They're like Eeyore, you know, just, whoa, it's me. And they're not excited. On the inverse, we all know that person is just really joyful about what they do. I love being around people that are full of joy. And why is that important that we have joy in our job? Well, because what God's done in me is reflected in what I do. Do I have joy about what God's done in me? One place that I love that you can find people with a lot of joy are volunteers at this little community called The Orchard here in Aurora, Illinois. We have some of the most killer, joyful volunteers of any church I know of. I love coming in and seeing the welcome teams, and they're handing out stuff, and they've got a smile on their face, and you really feel genuinely glad that you're there. They seem glad that you're there, and they're smiling. Or if you drop your kids off in Orchard Kids and you pick them up, these volunteers, they're smiling, or in the coffee bar, or in Orchard Students, or in all the missional things that we're doing in the city and around the world. People are doing it with a smile on their face because they're a redeemed people. They know that God's done something deep in them. And so it's not just being a welcome teams person and doing their little once a month thing. It's really a role where they're serving God. They're reflecting God by what they do. We get to work with joy, even if it's that job. Maybe you're in a place where you feel stiffed, you should have gotten a raise, or you've gotten demoted, you're working some job that you really don't want to have to do. You can still have joy, because your identity is not in your position. And if you are that 19-year-old kid who's working a drive-through someplace, or you're working in the mall or whatever, and you're thinking, oh, this stinks and I need a real job, don't be so quick to go out and find your career. You can have joy in the midst of that. You can take my money when I'm buying my kids stuff with a lot of joy. We've all been in those positions where we hate our job, but listen, there will come a day when you realize that that job helped you to become who you are. I couldn't do some of the things that I do now had I not had a job at Hardee's, one of the best fast food restaurants ever. Hot ham and cheese, little mayo on there. Wherever it is, whatever your job is, you can operate with a sense of joy because you're not working for that boss. You're not working so that your career can grow. You're working so that in the moment you can honor God through what you do, because of what he's done deep inside of you. The next one is we should work missionally. That just means that God's plan is that we're a people on mission. And our mission is to love God and love people. And one of the greatest ways to show our love for God at work is to just to be joyful and to live out our joy in front of other people and to love people. And what if we looked at our job as an act of worship? Because it really should be. It's a response to what God's done in our life. We're doing what he's given us to do. We're doing it well. We're doing it with skill. We're working hard. We're doing it with joy. What happens when you start doing that? People start paying attention. So that first question that I asked of, like, if we were to survey your coworkers, what would they say about what God's done in you? You can change that missionally in your job by being diligent and by being skillful and putting a smile on your face and being joyful even when circumstances are a little bit tough, because you remember God's got this. God's got this. And all of that is important. Why? How I work reflects God's work in me. And the last thing I want to say this morning, this is one of the most important parts of considering our work, and it's this. God intends for us to be resting regularly. Remember how earlier I said in the very beginning God created and he worked, God was the first worker? Well, in that creation narrative, it ends kind of beautifully with on the seventh day, what? God. Okay, let's try that again. On the seventh day, God rested. Do you think God rested because he was exhausted? Do you think he was like, man, that took a lot more work than I thought I was going to? I got to chill, dude, seriously. Somebody get my DirecTV up in here. Got to get a little ESPN going on. No, God did not do that because he wanted to watch SportsCenter. God did not rest because he was tired. You know why he rested? To show for us what we should do. And we see it even in the New Testament. You could see moments where Jesus withdrew and he went to a quiet place and he relaxed. And as Americans, that's one of the things we struggle with the most, is actually taking a moment and resting. I'm not good at that. I'll just be really honest. I'm not good at resting. I'm not good at taking time off, and I'm realizing more and more this year I got to take some time off, not a whole lot, but just a little bit in spurts, because I realize I get going fast and then I wear myself out over about 3 months. So what if every 3 months I took one day off and I went and just cleared my brain? Resting is one of the most important things we can do, and it honors God because we do it. And guys, I want you to look at me. Every man in this room, look at me. One of the greatest gifts you can give your children is to rest from your job and to leave work at work and to come home and just be a dad. The greatest thing you can do for your kids this year is to invest in them. Not be a byproduct of your job, but just to go home and relax and leave work at work and just unwind. That's one of the greatest things you can do in the life of your kids. And I remember my grandpa at 54 years of age had worked like a dog his whole life. Work, work, work. And he confided to his dad on a Monday morning, "Hey, I realize I have worked because I thought being a good dad was providing well in my family and doing all of these sorts of things to give them a nice life. But I wasn't there a lot because I was always working, and so I really feel like I need to slow down and I need some time. I just need to relax a little bit, take some time off, spend some time with my grandkids." And that same day, he had a brain aneurysm, and 8 days later, he was gone. I will never forget that. And I'm not perfect at this, trust me. Resting is one of the hardest things for me to do. I like to be busy. I like to go 90 miles an hour. But I want to be this year on mission with God, partnering with him. And that includes being a dad and slowing down. And I don't want to wait until I'm 54 years old to come up with the realization that I don't have to work for my family to love me. I don't have to kill myself to give a certain standard of living for my kids to appreciate me. They're going to appreciate the time with me far more. It's worth the investment. You know why? Because how I work and how I rest reflects God's work in me. Well, we talk a lot about the Orchard being an irresistible church, and what we mean by that is a church that is so influential in this community, that we love people so radically and we serve so radically and we work so hard and do our job and we honor people through what we do, that if we decided, you know what, we've had it, we're closing the doors, that the whole city would surround this building with picket signs saying, "We're not going to let you do this. You're too important to this community." Can you imagine that? That'd be crazy. And so we talk a lot about that. And those aren't just marketing words. Those are real. We really believe that the Orchard is becoming an irresistible church in this community. And our work, if we would truly embrace our identity as the workmanship of God, if we truly do that and our work would reflect that, can you imagine what it would do for the employers, the workplace of people all around this community by this army of workers who are diligent and they're skillful and they're full of joy and they just love people radically and they take time off and they walk away and they come back recharged and they just kill it and they just kill it and they're just after it. We would be that irresistible church, that irresistible force in this community. And I want to go back to these two statements and I'm going to bring them up and I want you to say these with me. These are so, so important. Please don't miss this. If you forget everything else I've said, take these two statements to heart. Let's say the first one together. My job doesn't define who I am. God does. And the second, how I work reflects God's work in me. I want to address just a couple of people and then we're going to close. If you're right now without a job and you're unemployed and you're asking God this question, God, where are you? I remind you that God has not left you or forsaken you, that he still sees you as his chosen, his beloved, and that he's got that job for you. And then in the meantime, ask God, what do you want me to do with my time right now? Don't just wait and play the waiting game because you will drive yourself absolutely bananas. Ask God, what do you want me to do today? Maybe it's volunteer someplace. Maybe it's serving at the homeless shelter, or maybe it's working on your craft or getting better at what you do or taking some classes or whatever it is so that you're taking forward motion, you're doing things to make yourself more appealing to someone who might potentially hire you down the road. Don't be afraid to step out and ask God, what do you want me to do today versus just sitting and waiting. And if you're retired and you're listening and you're thinking, well, that's all great, but my life's over, my work life's over, listen. If you truly believe that your identity as a follower of Christ has been transformed by the goodness of God, then you never retire. Until your last breath, work doesn't stop. Yeah, it might stop for the corporation that you worked for, the company, the organization, or whatever, But God's mission never ends for you until you take your last breath. And I encourage you and I challenge you to ask God that question, what can I do to get on mission with you today? I'm going to ask you just to close your eyes. And before we go, I'm going to ask you to reflect on just a couple of questions. And I hope you take these notes and you look at it, and it's not just something you go, well, that was a nice talk, but you go, tomorrow you get out of bed and say, God, how can I partner with you today? And ask God to help you with that. But ask yourself this question. Am I finding my identity in anything but God? Am I finding my identity in anything but God? And if you are, you're probably finding your identity in things that change, and you're at risk for losing your identity. The second question, does my work reflect God's work in me? If it doesn't, you can fix that easily by asking God to work in you and then being diligent and skillful and joyful and missional in your job. Those are really tough questions to answer, I know. It's hard for me even to say them out loud and to think about it in my life, because I've got to make some changes this year to more closely reflect what I believe God's done in me so that comes out and manifests itself in how I do my job and how I treat my family and how I encounter people in this community. Father, I just want to thank you for today. You are good. Every good gift comes from you. And even for those of us in this room who are jobless or in miserable jobs that we just can't stand, you can do beautiful, wonderful things in the midst of a season of waiting. And I pray that you, Holy Spirit, would minister to hearts, and that the two phrases that we're chewing on this morning would just resonate deep inside and would truly lead to transformation. I pray for those people who are struggling right now. God, just bless them. Remind them that you're near. May their prayer not be, God, get me out of here, but God, be near to me. God, whatever circumstance that people find themselves in, be near to them. And just love them radically and let them reflect you. Do a work in all of our hearts, God. And let everything that we do reflect you well. And may our identity never be in anything other than the fact that we are God's workmanship, called by you to serve you and to partner with you in your plan for all of creation. And we just submit that to you. And I just pray for these people. I pray for myself. I pray for people who are seeking you right this moment. Lord, speak to them. Speak to their heart. Remind them that you're hearing their prayers, and that you're doing good things, and you will continue to do good things. And I just ask all this in the sweet name of Jesus. And as a community, we said, amen.